The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
End of another week. Where did the week go? I will say this, it was action-packed. If you like fake news, garbage, perverts, pedophiles, crime, criminality, betrayal, treason, and the invasion of the formerly United States of America. And Mercury in retrograde. It was a hell of a week. Other than that, seen one, you've seen them all. Admiral Cooper is standing by from his flagship down there in the state of Florida. How are you?
I'm still wondering over that intro. That's quite the intro. And I thought we had it rough because it's just been blinding rain all week here.
Well, I know. Doggone it, I forgot. I was going to email you today. I said, email Harry, have him take a couple of pictures of the torch red Corvette. We have no pictures. We have no pictures.
Oh, boy. How can you live without pictures of my vet?
I have trouble sleeping. I don't know about anybody else.
Let's see what we can do about that while we're talking on the show.
Send me the one with the three blondes. Or was that a blonde, a brunette, and a redhead? Never mind.
That was on my
disregard,
boat.
Disregard.
That was on my boat before I was married.
I know. I'm kidding.
I know. The only females to ride in my Corvette are my wife and my daughter.
Wife and your daughter, and that's the way it better stay.
Yeah, not at the same time, of course. But when I first got the vet, it was 19 years ago. My kids were little. There were a couple of times when I had to go someplace. And it was the only car I had working. I put them both into the right side seat and buckle them up and drive very carefully.
Sure.
But
sure.
Now,
well, you've had that car 20 years. That's interesting. I didn't know
19 years. It's coming on 20.
Yeah.
I got it right, like I say, when I got home from a flotilla meeting. I was a Coast Guard auxiliary flotilla commander, and I got an email from my doctor. Hey, Mr. Cooper, this is Dr. Desitel. Your test came back, and I was wrong. You don't have cancer after all. So, okay. I went out and took my checkbook, and the next morning told my wife I was going to get a haircut and came back with a 1981 Corvette.
Better than a haircut.
Oh, bunch better. And it was cheaper. I think I mentioned to you how, because of the banking situation, I was using a bank in Nassau at the time. They never even processed my check. I know that's a sad thing.
That is still outstanding, as it were?
Yeah.
How interesting. What did you pay for that car? 19 years ago?
If I had...
Just in round numbers.
No, if I had actually paid for it, $4,000.
That's cheap.
Damn cheap.
What was the market back then? I don't understand.
No, the problem there, not a problem, was
I remember. Okay. Here's where Harry explains how he got that 2.5-foot swastika off the hood of the Corvette without damaging it. He bought it. That's why it was so cheap. I remember the story now. So what you did, you stripped it down, you painted it torch red.
Right, after we had had it for a while, yeah. My buddy Big George, who's no longer with us, I'm sorry to say, he insisted I bring it over.
He's in a better place, Harry.
Yeah, that's true. He was a great guy. He'd just give you the shirt off his back, but he just didn't watch his health. He was about 280 pounds or so and just 6 foot tall. Right. And then he just stopped worrying about it, and he went up to over 400 pounds, and your heart doesn't like pumping blood that much.
Wow. Do you know every pound of fat is something like, I read this years ago, I have no medical science to back it up, but I did read that every pound of extra weight on your body is something like, you know, capillaries are tiny. It's almost a mile's worth of capillaries that your heart has to pump blood through for every pound of fat on your body.
Yeah, your body doesn't like that sort of stuff. That's sad. No. He was a great guy. And he told me, bring the Corvette over to his shop. He'd buff it up because it was crummy gray over crummy black. And he didn't have a car shop, but he had a big warehouse because he had these... carpet cleaners you rent from Ace Hardware. And I brought it over expecting him to get the buffer out. Next thing I know, it's up on jack stands, the wheels are off, the glass is out of the car, the taillights, the headlights are all out, and he's slobbering elephant snot on the car. And next thing I know, the paint was all off.
What is the elephant stuff? What is that?
Paint stripper. But it looks like elephant snot.
Well, I'll take your word for that.
Nasty stuff. And next thing I know, the car is stripped down to bare fiberglass. Then I hear the saws all going. He was cutting the glamour curves off the front fenders. You know, this is the old C3, the ones with those knife-edge front fenders. And... I said, what the hell are you doing? Oh, they weren't right. Okay, fine. And he rebuilt them. He re-fiberglassed them. And next thing I know, it looked great. We put on 6 coats of gel coat, 6 coats of yellow primer, 6 coats of torch red.
Come on.
And 1.5 gallons of diamond clear. Boy, you look at that car in the bright sunlight, and then when you look away, everything has a bluish tinge to it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, did you get the picture? Well,
I'm looking here. Hold on. Not yet. Oh, here it comes.
Yeah.
There it is.
It has to stop for the CIA to check it.
Look at that. The top is still black. Okay. Yeah.
No, those are mirrored T-tops.
Oh, they're clear. They're clear.
Yeah, but they're silvered.
Got it. Are those rear? Are the rear wheel well flares? Is that stock?
Yeah. At least I think it is.
Right. Well, that's about as red as it's going to get.
Yeah, and what was it? You know, the guy that was going to put a new exhaust system on it for me and kept the car for 2.5 months. He put an awesome header and exhaust system on it with the squared or rectangled tailpipe, the outlets at the back. Oh, that thing just sounds... if you remember back to the movie The Great Race, Jack Lemmon as Professor Fate had a car called the Hannibal Twin 8. and this car sounds just like that thing now.
Huh.
And it runs like a scalded dog.
Scalded dog. I haven't seen one of those in years. I understand the idea, though.
It was almost worth the 2.5 months he had it in his shop.
Yeah, I remember you were complaining. This, it's a 1981.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, do these, it's, for all of you out there, I'm going to put this under Harry's name here in a few minutes. It'll show up under there in guests. It's got the side exhausts that flare out in front of the rear tires. That must make a loud rumble for sure.
It did, but unfortunately when I had those pipes put on, this was some years ago I had those pipes put on, it cost me a lot of horsepower because the exhaust pipe coming down from the engine was 2.25-inch diameter, and these things were 1 7/16, so you're choking it off.
That's silly.
It cost,
so you took them off.
They're off now, yeah. That's the guy that did this, the 2.5 month job. Took them off. And
George, come on. Come on. You don't do reducing like that in exhaust systems. You
well,
go the
that
other
was
way.
My bright idea. And I took it over to the guy that does exhaust systems here in Hillbilly Heaven. And I told him, put the side pipes on. He says, you're going to hate it. I said, no, I want them on. He says, you're not going to like it. I said, put them on. He kept telling me, I'm not going to like it. I'm not going to like it. I put them on. He's right. I didn't like it, but they sure looked good and they sounded good. But they sapped a lot of horsepower, I'm guessing, probably.
If they had gone the other direction and gotten bigger, and I thought that's what you had there. The noise rattling around in there would have been something else.
Right.
If they were bigger on the side pipe, then where they were necked down coming off the headers. I understand.
Yeah, these were not the expensive Corvette original equipment. These were El Cheapo from, are you ready for this, Warshawski's or J.C. Whitney in Chicago.
J.C. Whitney.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to tell me you got them off of a Corvair or something. That's
no,
joke.
No, not quite. Right. But that's been taken care of, and he went through the engine, too, and it just hums something beautiful. And
Nice. All right.
Yeah.
Very good.
So when I get a few bucks ahead, I'm going to put another 100 horsepower into the engine, but not now. Don't have the time or the money.
Got it. All right. Well, I'll put the picture up so everybody can see. That they call this the Coke bottle Corvette.
Right, the Coke
like
bottle rear window, because most of those cars had a cutback kind of rear window that went straight up and down. But the 80, 81, and 82 had this Coke bottle back window that you have alluded to.
Very good. Very good. Okay, I'll put that picture up shortly. Now, we have a lot to cover. Speaking of pictures, we have tons of pictures. There are 5 galleries of pictures under Harry's name, and what we're going to do is start off with books. These are books that you can't find in a normal bookstore. These are real history books. No joke. This is not the skewed, corrupted version of history that the winners always write, and those who curry favor from the winners write to stay in line with them. These are real books from real people who lived through the war and who can speak about it. So that's the first group of pictures we're going to look at. So if you're new to the program, go to Rents.com. That's R-E-N-S-E, Rents.com. Go to Rents News there. Scroll down on the left-hand side of the page. You'll see guests and Friday. And the one guest you want to note is Harry Cooper right there. Then you see 5 galleries under Harry's name. Click on gallery number 1, and let's open that up. There we go. Okay. Books and books and books. Wow. All right, Maestro. Let's click on number 1 and open that up. Probably the single most important book, certainly written about Germany at war's end and since the war. The most important book, historically speaking, because it ties so many myths together and kicks others out the door. It tells you the truth. No, Hitler didn't die with Eva Braun in the bunker. They escaped. They were taken out, and they escaped and lived out their natural lives in South America. Take it away, Maestro.
Yeah, absolutely correct. Our book came out in 2006, and several copycats have come along since then. They make the same stupid error. Maybe they're copying from one another, but they all say that Hitler escaped on board U-530, the submarine that surrendered in Mar del Plata in July of 45. Absolutely false. The man was violently seasick, horribly claustrophobic, so to think he's going to spend a couple of months bouncing around in a smelly steel tube. No, we know how he got away. It's in the book. He flew. And so those first three books, 1, 2, and 3, tell about how Hitler did not commit suicide in the bunker. He lived out his life in South America. Number one is Hitler in Argentina, photo number one. And that tells step by step how Don Angel Alcazar de Velasco had chatted with Hitler every day. Not chatted. He gave him a report every day for the last couple months in the Führer bunker.
Yeah.
And then Don Angel and a bunch of other people escaped and wound up in various places. Don Angel, being a Spanish citizen, was repatriated to Spain, still kept working for the Reich. The Reich did not evaporate on May 8, 1945. Martin Bormann was in charge of it then, and he worked for Bormann. And in 1952, he was sent on board a plane, didn't know where he was going. He wound up meeting with Hitler in, I think it was September, I'm going by memory, 1952. And we're absolutely certain that was at the place called Inalco in southern Patagonia. I don't want to take up too much of your time on each book. Number two is Hitler and the Secret Alliance. People say, well, how could anybody do that? How could the people from the Reich? We know there are at least 3,000 people from the Third Reich went down to Argentina and assimilated quickly into the society. How is that possible? From about 1905 onward, for a decade or two, Argentina was giving huge tracts of land to people, Europeans, mostly Germans, some Italians. They had cattle ranches. They had sheep ranches. They also had the banks, the utility companies, et cetera, et cetera. And so there were towns down there that were entirely German, even before World War I started, and they just brought in some of the people from World War I, and they kept, you know, having their offspring. Sounds like the first book of the Bible, and this one begat that one, et cetera, et cetera. And they just built their communities. So when Hitler was running for office, he got a lot of financial support from Germans living in Argentina, especially from the Eichhorn family, who owned the Hotel Eden. And so when World War II ended, these Germans living in Argentina were still patriotic Germans. And so they opened the doors for these guys coming in. Plus, when Martin Bormann showed up, he had tons of money with him in various different countries' currencies, precious metals, and he had the numbers for the secret bank accounts. And he helped Juan Perón go from being a poor colonel in 1945 to being ultra wealthy in 1946 and being president of Argentina. So these Germans from the Reich could move around easily in Argentina. And then when the coup happened in 1955 and Juan Perón was ousted, then they all had to scramble. And they went deeper into country or into other countries around there. And that's all covered in photo number two, Hitler and the Secret Alliance. Photo number three, Hitler's spy web in South America. tells exactly that about all the spy stuff. They had spooks everywhere down there. And during the war, there was a little town called San Antonio Oeste. I'm butchering the Spanish pronunciation, sorry. And that was at Caleta de los Loros, which is Parrot Cove, and submarines, and also some 90 or 100-ton sailing vessels were coming, because you can't pick up wood on radar, at least you couldn't in those days. Now the turnbuckles get picked up. But anyhow, they were coming in and out of this place at will, bringing in supplies, mostly radio transmitters and stuff, agents, and bringing home agents, and bringing in money to keep these guys going. So they had an open door, and the spy web was pretty much based in the Lausanne. It's, if you pronounce it the way it's shown, it's Lahausen, but pronounced Lausanne. And they were kind of communicating. It's kind of like a spy web. That's what it was, a spy web. The Lausanne wool stores all through Argentina were little headquarters places for spies. And all run by General Lausanne from the German military, who quickly turned on his buddies and testified at the Nuremberg trials to save his own butt.
You know, the sad thing is, those trials were not trials at all. They were show trials, monkey trials.
Yeah, they were tribunals, actually.
People were tortured. There's nothing in there to be remotely proud of, as many prominent jurists have said since the war. It was just a joke, deadly joke for some.
Yeah, it wasn't a joke. It was retribution, revenge.
That's right.
And to intimidate the German populace. So.
But it was. Anyhow, hold on a second here.
Yes, sir.
Hold on. We got to pause and let's get this break done. Thank our sponsors. And just another quick aside, I get emails from some of you, you know, do these things really work? I have been in this business for a long time. I am very proud of all of our sponsors. I use them. They work. They are absolutely unique in the world in many ways and unprecedented. So don't discount them and do patronize them. They're worth every bit of it. Hang on. Be right back. Back to our Friday night agenda with Admiral Cooper. We're having a lot of interesting talk already. If you're new to the program, I'm sure some of it comes as a surprise. If you're one of our many, many regulars around the world, you know the story, and many of you already have these books. Certainly, Hitler in Argentina is, in and of itself, one of the most amazing revelatory books I've ever read about history. It shows you the enormity of the lies that we are fed and have been fed really since 1945. It's that long. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And unfortunately, Jim Mars passed away awful early, I thought, because he and I were starting to work on some of the other stuff down there. I've dug out so much more history, because I've been down there, and he wrote that book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, and we were going to work on more of that stuff, but unfortunately, he died.
Jimmy was a very, very close friend of mine for a long time.
Yeah, he was a great guy. He and I got along fine, too, thanks to, you know, you had us both on your show one time, the two of us together. And unfortunately, then, right around the same time he died, our member, Jack Goodyear, who financed all our expeditions down there, he passed away. So that now we're...
We want to mention... Let me just take a little minute or two here.
Sure.
Jack Goodyear was a man who really deserves an enormous amount of credit. He's unknown. He was the man who made so many of Harry's trips possible.
Oh, yeah.
In which we all benefited, those of us who care about reality, not the melodrama soap opera that we're served up as history. Jack made it possible. If there are any of you out there who are sitting on a sizable nest egg, and there are a lot of you listening who are, and
sure.
you want to make a contribution to our fight to have access to our birthright, which is the truth, real history, please contact Harry and maybe say, well, you know, what can I do to help you? He goes on trips just by himself to do research, and there's no one on the planet, no one on the planet that can do this like Harry Cooper. And I would urge you, if you do have the wherewithal, to help, even with plane fare, down and back. That's a huge contribution. Contact Harry. I'm not begging, I'm just laying it out there. You have a chance to play a big role in what we all have a birthright to, and that's the truth of our history. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much. You're absolutely correct. And unlike, as you know, Jeff, unlike these comic book authors, I call them.
They're plagiarists. They're thieves. They're fakes.
Well,
come on.
A lot of it, yeah. And a lot of them, too, do their research in a library. Basically,
right.
that means they're copying other people's work, and then they do their own book copied from their book, and then they copy from this one, and the other guy copies from them,
that's
and
right.
it's just a circle. And, you know, if you're not the lead dog, the view never changes. We go there. We talk to people. And, we're going to post a video that I took of a very nice lady who was having her honeymoon down in southern Patagonia in 1954. And since Argentina was not involved in the war, really, they knew both sides. They knew everything on both sides in their news. It was before the advent of fake news, I guess. And she and her new husband were having dinner in the dining room of this very upscale hotel. And she looked across the room and she told her husband, "That man looks like Adolf Hitler." And her husband looked and he says, "Yep, that man is Adolf Hitler." And we know now that he was living in that area. So, and we'll get.
Yeah, and you have this. You have this video that you're going to put up.
Yes, I have the video, and and we put it up. We have to put it up on our own site now because the snowflakes at YouTube took down our YouTube channel, which had nothing but history clips on there or interviews with people, and they took it down, said it was hate speech. I probably should not have posted the clips with Ronald Reagan. That's probably what set him off. But they just, there was no hate speech. It was pure history. But it's not liberal, left-wing history, so it's hate speech. The dummies. But anyhow, yeah, people can subscribe to our gold tier, and they can go to our website, sharkhunters.com, and then, sharkhunters.com, and then click on multimedia, and then you'll see video collection 1, 2, 3, 4, and come Sunday, there'll be number 5. Megan's been working very hard on this. And there's also the Hitler Escape page. Click on any one of those, and you'll get a little gold text block that will tell you how to proceed from there. And we've got about 100 photos, or videos, I'm sorry, already up there. And once you get into the gold tier, you can watch them all you want, as often as you want, as many as you want, and they're all there. And
so,
we're putting more up all the time. We've got about 100
oh, yeah.
up right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you've got, this is going to be an enormous library of wonderful
films.
Things to watch.
Right.
And the nice thing about the videos, they vary in length.
Mm-hmm.
Some are shorter, some are longer. You've got some that are short.
Well, yeah, we haven't posted real short eclipse yet. That was on our YouTube site, too, that they pulled down. We got a lot of short eclipses that are previous to the other ones. They're 1 to 2 minutes long. But the ones we have up now, there's about 100 of them, and I think there's 15 more going up over the weekend. Those are anywhere from about half an hour to 2 hours. Uh-huh. And there's stuff you'll never see anywhere else. for instance, Die Grauen Wolf, that's a great film of U-boat combat. There's another one called U-Boats in Combat, and you're riding on U-46 with Engelbert Endras. And there's interviews, because the beauty of me starting Shark Hunters when I did, and there's no brilliance on my part, that just the way it happened, God pointed me that way and I did it. I knew all these old skippers. And we interviewed them. Otto Kretschmer, the top submarine commander of the war. We've got an interview we did with him in 1994. I had a sleeping room in his house. Eric Topp, we've got two interviews, 1994 and 2000. I've been over to visit him I don't know how many times. So, and Hardagen, and, oh, geez, so many of them that were friends and that were members of Shark Hunters. So they're all there, and you can see them as much as you want. And stuff by Lena Riefenstahl, too. She was a member of Shark Hunters until her death. Brilliant lady. So all that stuff.
This Shark Hunters is truly an extraordinary historical venue. There's nothing like it. The membership you've had, the people who were members, just too many to count. The biggest names that survived the war from the German side, from other sides, from all sides, just member after member after member.
Admiral Flucky, who was a commander at the time, Gene Flucky. Most highly decorated American submariner ever, Medal of Honor, four Navy crosses, et cetera, et cetera. He was a guest in my house. And they were all, whichever flag flew over them, they were all great people. The last supreme commander of the Soviet Navy, five-star fleet Admiral Vladimir Chernyavin, is still a member of Shark Hunters. They were all patriotic to their own country.
Well, that's what nationalism is all about. Will you? We've got to move into our pictures here. We're never even going to buy our first gallery.
I'm sorry, I'll quit
gabbing so much. It's okay. We've got book after book after book here, and you can look at them, and you can really feel what's in the book by the cover. These covers are often extraordinary. They're very good covers.
Thank you. After I parted company with your buddy, who I see you're back with again at NICE, I started, Tiffany designed a couple of them, but now I'm designing them all, and it really wasn't that hard.
You are doing it, aren't you? That's right. Harry is designing the covers now.
Yeah.
Talk about a man for all seasons, huh? That's pretty nice.
What can I say? I'm out here in hillbilly heaven where there's not a lot of art talent. Your listeners can go click on photo number 8, and it tells you the books are regular price, but for people from your show, we'll drop the price to $20 each for any book. And we've got a bunch of them. Any one of them, they're $20 a piece. Buy as many as you want, $20 a piece.
Wow.
And shipping is $8 a book in the USA or $15 to any other country. We don't control the rates. Uncle Sam does that. So, but all the information is there. Your listeners can click on it. And if your listeners want to send me an email at the address, at that email address, send me an email, say, you heard it on the Rent Show. I'll send you an electronic copy of our magazine, no charge.
Nice. Honest to God, I don't know how you do it. Each magazine is just packed with readable, interesting, often fascinating little pieces of history, reality.
Yeah, and books number 4, your photos number 4, 5, 6, 7, those are library quality research books. They're not the smaller paperbacks. They're 8.5 by 11, and they cover a group of submarines, German submarines, in each book, because you can't put the entire U-boat Waffe in one book. But it has every book that's in that series, or every boat that's in that series, what type it is, what yard built it, when she was launched, when she was commissioned, when she was put out of service, who were the skippers, and we go into depth where they were born, what were their promotions, where did they, and their awards, and then all of their actions and all the ships they attacked with tons of photos. Each one's close to 300 pages with more doggone photos than you can imagine. And there's little insights into some of the skippers that I knew. You're never going to find this anywhere else. These Johnny-come-lately internet sites, all they do is spitball their theories and thoughts back and forth on some forum that has very little relation to reality.
Correct. That's well said. All right. We'll leave it at that.
Okay.
That's good. I think we made the point, and I think anybody who's ever seen a shark hunter's book understands that these are just really unprecedented books.
We get so many really, really wonderful comments from people who read the book.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Okay. The books here, just go through and look at each one. Any particular book you want to highlight here before we move on to the next gallery?
They're all great. It depends on what you're looking for. If you want to learn about Hitler's escape and the Third Reich in South America, photos number 1, 2, 3, they tell the story. If you want to know the complete history of specific boats, photos 4, 5, 6, 7. Then number 9, 10, and 11 are all about the flyboys. And these books do not have a theme running through the whole book, don't have a plot line. Each chapter is a separate, standalone story by a different veteran. And then for the U-boats, books number 12 through 24, books through 12 through 24 are the same basic thesis there. Not a plot line through the whole book, but each chapter is a separate, standalone memory of a different U-boat skipper.
That's the way to do it. These vignettes skip all over the place. You're just not going to get. When you have a plot line, that's wonderful. That's the way it often is. But these jump around to so many different areas, different perspectives of the war. They're just, they're priceless.
I can't take credit for it. I was a kid in high school, and I read a book called Submarine by Captain Ned Beach, who was also a member of Shark Hunters many years later. He's the guy that wrote Run Silent, Run Deep. That was what was in his book, Submarine. Each chapter was a different memory of a different guy. Mm-hmm. But this is mostly German U-boaters, but some Brits, some Americans, and then there's a few in there by destroyer guys who were hunting the U-boats. So that's what all those are about. And the last two, number photo 25 is about the very rare types. Number 26 is the rise and fall of the U-Boot-Waffe, and that pretty well tells the story there.
We want to mention also that because of the rapid advance in radar, it became a very difficult thing to go to sea as a young German 18, 19-year-old sailor on a U-boat and expect to come home. They all expected to come home, but how many actually did come home, Harry?
Yeah, about 5,600 people out of 30,000. It was about one man out of seven that came home. And from Black May onward, which was May of 1943, from that point onward, one boat out of 10 made it home from the first war patrol. The other nine were killed on their very first war patrol. Not only the radar, and the Brits, and then later the Americans were able to mount 10-centimeter radar in their aircraft, and they could spot even the head of a periscope. And at the same time, in May of 43, the German codes were broken, and England and the U.S. could read the German messages just as fast as the Germans could. And then they also came up with Huffduff, which was the high-frequency directional finder, where unlike the old RDF loop that had to be turned manually to zero in on where a radio signal was coming from. This one, as soon as the guy tapped the key once, he was triangulated, and within 15 minutes, they had long-range bombers overhead, and it was they referred to that May of 43 as Black May or the Stalingrad at Sea. It was horrible. They lost almost as many boats that 1 month alone as the United States Navy did in the whole war. The U-boats, May of 43, they lost, I think it was 44 submarines. And the United States Navy only lost 52 in the whole war. And I think four of them were from accidents or grounding. So we lost 48 through combat in the whole war. They lost 44 just in that month alone. Sad situation.
People don't know. The Germans were building these U-boats at around the clock. They never stopped. And they were the best submarines of the war. Some of the advanced designs are extraordinary, to put it mildly. And this enormous technological gift, this brilliance, was constantly being poured into every type of armament, every weapon system that the Germans had. They just ran out of time. And when
time
you look at pilots and materiel and
right.
all of it.
The United States could build planes, ships, boats, et cetera, way faster than the Germans could sink them. The Russians could expend 1 million people today and another 1 million tomorrow. And the technological advances weren't enough. And then, of course, the Allies, primarily the U.S., bombed all the refineries they could, which starved right. Germany from fuel. They had all sorts of brand new fighters sitting there with no fuel. And, of course,
no pilots, no fuel.
No seasoned pilots, that's right.
That's amazing. And at the end of the war, when the American troops began to move through Germany, they found small trucks, big trucks, running on no gasoline, no petroleum. Mm-hmm. They didn't understand what they were seeing. Each truck had something like what was, let's call it a water heater shaped item on the back.
Yeah.
And what that was a smoldering fire, keep it simple, in a water heater like cylinder. And what it would do would create from oak chips or whatever kind of wood chips they were putting in there, it would create smoke and vapor. Well, it turns out that smoke and vapor wasn't completely burned in a low-temperature fire, and it
right.
still had energy into it. So the Germans were smart enough.
It was combustible mixture.
They took that smoke mixture out, mixed it with air, put it into the carburation system of the engine, and it worked.
Yeah.
So these cars were running around basically creating their own fuel with wood chips, and the Americans couldn't believe it.
Because the Americans had plenty of fuel.
That's right.
Because the war never came to the United States, and our refineries were still going full tilt, etc. So, and we could get off onto how Standard Oil was supplying everybody, but that'd be another whole show.
Yes, and Ford was making trucks in Germany too.
Mm-hmm.
Look. The people pay the price. The people suffer and die. The big money barons always score on both sides of every war. That's the way it works.
Standard Oil, they sold to everybody. So they didn't care who won as long as the war kept going on and they kept selling fuel. The Seven Sisters, Standard Oil, Texaco, the board of directors of Texaco had to kick out their CEO, Torkel Reiber, because he refused to sell fuel to the Allies, and he publicly said that if a German U-boat skipper saw a Texaco tanker helping the Allies, he should torpedo it. I read the interview in, I think it was Life magazine, 1940, October, I think, at the Newberry Library in Chicago, where they've got all these old magazines. So, Germany was being starved from food and from fuel, And we won't even get into who really started the war, because that's another whole show. And I'm already on the Spitlickers shit list there, the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Funny, what's in a name, huh?
Yeah,
Southern
right.
Poverty Law Center. In that
right.
case, nothing is in a name.
Absolutely, right. So anyhow, sorry I got you off topic.
No, it's all right. We're about out of time this first hour. So do take a stroll through these book covers. Just click on each one during the break and look at the artwork, understand what you're getting. You're not getting a story told by a mariner or an aviator. You're getting vignettes from all over the theater of operations. A look at the other side. I am still, and have been for decades, a very large supporter of our greatest general, General George Patton.
Oh, yeah, he was a great guy.
Most of all, because General George Patton was man enough to look at the reality of the war and speak about it. He said, we fought the wrong enemy. He
yeah.
knew the enemy. You don't have to say anything. Let me do this. He knew
okay.
the enemy was communism, was Bolshevik, Zionist, socialist, Marxist communism. He knew that was the cancer on the planet. It wasn't the National Socialists in Germany. Of only 1 out of 10 in the military were even party affiliates. They had nothing to do with it. And the term Nazi was not a German word. It was coined by the British MI6 to try and make it sound trite and ugly and stupid. Am I defending Germany? No, I'm just trying to balance reality here. If General George Patton said, we fought the wrong enemy, that ought to be enough for a lot of people to say, what? Maybe I better read up about this and find out what the man was saying. We'll leave it right there with you, and that's a challenge I issue to all of you. If you really want to know about World War II, read General Patton's letters to his wife, for example. All right, there you go. All right. Mr. Cooper and I will be right back with all of you good people in a few minutes. We're going to look at a lot more pictures, so stay tuned. A lot ahead.